Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight, my recent conversation with Mike Love, co-founder and lead singer with the Beach Boys. Love very recently released a song and a video for it called This Too Shall Pass, written for this time of pandemic. It offers a salute as well as a hopeful message in the form of a song which feels like any of the greatest hits of the Beach Boys. That's up in just about 15 minutes. First, though, not quite 2 years ago on KVC Arts, Manuel Rogers spoke with Andrew Schaefer about his book Hope Never Dies. This is a fictional parody of sorts which has Barack Obama and Joe Biden recently out of office becoming detectives. Schaefer's now given us a follow-up, Hope Rides Again. So, once again, here's Emmanuel Rogers.
Joining us now is New York Times bestselling author Andrew Schaefer. You may know Andrew from some of his previous books, 50 Shades of Earl Grey and The Day of the Donald and Hope Never Dies. But today, Andrew is here to talk about his latest satire, Hope Rides Again. Thank you for joining us today, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Emmanuel.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I actually enjoyed the first book, Hope Never Dies, and it was a bit funny and strange to me. So with that, before we talk about Hope Rides Again, will you share with us a little bit about the preceding book, Hope Never Dies, and how you came up with the idea of using two well-known names as the heroes?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange book if you look at it, because it has Obama and Biden on the cover in a car. It looks like a Hardy Boys story almost. It's this great painting. And it says an Obama-Biden mystery, and people always say, well, what does that mean? Well, it's basically just a fictionalized version of Obama and Biden. They've just left the White House in the first book. They're about 6 months out, and there's an Amtrak conductor that gets murdered. I mean, nobody thinks it's murder except for Barack Obama and Joe Biden, of course.
Right.
And they sort of decide on their own, without much help from the Secret Service, to sort of investigate this murder. And so, you know, it's a real murder mystery. It's not just like joke after joke. There is funny stuff in there. Like you said, some stuff made you laugh. But really, I worked really hard to make it a good whodunit. So it's not a super political book. It's just using these characters and saying, what would happen if politicians actually had to solve crimes? Could they do it? Well, you know, the answer is they do it, but they're kind of bumbling half the time. They're not the world's best detectives. That's where I think some of the humor comes into the books.
Well, yeah, I'm really glad that they're politicians, because I don't think I want to call them for a lost cat in real life.
No. If you want something done, I mean, who's going to call a politician? Come on.
Okay. Well, with that bit of praise about politicians, I was wondering, have you had any feedback from the former president and vice president, Obama and Biden, about this book?
They both got copies of the books. I haven't heard from President Obama, but I did hear from Joe Biden when he came through Kentucky last year, which is where I live. Mm-hmm. And his people reached out to me and they said, hey, Joe wants to talk to you. And I was like, uh-oh. I couldn't tell what kind of tone they were using, but it showed up and he was so nice and he signed a copy of the book for me. We chatted for a couple of minutes and he was just super nice about the whole thing. And I think, you know, it's a flattering picture of him on the cover. Why wouldn't he love that? I don't think he had actually read it, but, as long as I get your $15, right? That's good.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's something you didn't share with me, but I'll bite because I read it. Why does the Obama and Biden team make a believable crack team of investigators?
Yeah, I think it's the very fact that they don't. I portray them in a realistic manner.
Yes.
They're not superhuman investigators. They're not, you know, this isn't Sherlock who picks up a piece of dirt off the ground and is like, oh, you were in this one particular area of town where only this type of mud, they're talented politicians, but they try their hand at this other thing and they're only kind of average at it, which I think is what makes it believable. And it also humanizes them quite a bit, because you remember Michael Jordan being great at basketball
Yes.
in the 80s and 90s, and then he tried his hand at baseball, and he was terrible, you know? And so, but it humanized him. You're like, okay, you know, we thought this guy was superhuman. He's not. Everybody calm down. He's human. So that's what I think this book does, that these books do.
Okay. Now, This is great because I was looking at something in the book, Hope Rides Again, where I was reading about Biden stating that he would never drive a Trans Am, that some hack put him on the cover of a book riding in a Trans Am. And then I think it struck me, wasn't that the first cover?
Yeah. So in the second book, Hope Rides Again, we actually referenced the first book in a joking sort of way, where it starts off with Biden picking up a copy of what's clearly the first book, although it's called Murder on the Amtrak Express. And he looks at him on the cover and he's like, I've never driven that kind of car before in my life, which is one of the funny things about the first book, was that the car that appears in the cover never appears inside the book itself. And so I had to come up with a reason in the second book to sort of retroactively let people know that there was a reason he wasn't in the car in the book, was because it wasn't one that he drives. Now, I do say that car does appear in Hope Rides Again, though.
Yes.
So he finally does get behind the wheel of that car, and he has a pretty good time in it, I should say.
Yeah, he actually changed his thoughts about that car and enjoyed driving it.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
I mean, the good thing is that the number of people that picked up the book and then the number of people that contacted me to say that car wasn't in the book was about 3 people.
Okay.
So there's not a big crossover between gearheads and readers of Obama-Biden mysteries.
No, I actually thought it was just something fun to pick up on as, you know, I'm reading it. And it's like, wait a minute. There's something about this Trans Am business that I noticed that came from somewhere else. And it's like, okay, I got it. It was in the first book. He doesn't know he was in. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Andrew, in writing these satires, you had to do some research about the main characters. What are some of the things that you learned about Obama and Biden that you did not previously know?
I learned, you know, the little things about them, like Joe's favorite ice cream is a ice cream chain called Jenny's Ice Creams, and, you know, Barack Obama's favorite bookstore is 57th Street Books here in Chicago. And so I learned these little details, and I find that if you get the little details right, you can then be as wild as you want with the mystery and all that other stuff, because people will believe, oh, well, he must know something about them because he knows what kind of ice cream he likes or something. Or his favorite meal is spaghetti. So, you know, that's kind of what I try to do, is try to throw those little details in. But, you know, I try to leave out the bigger details. I mean, you find out stuff about them and you go, that wouldn't have any place in this book, you know, like maybe Joe Biden swears up a storm behind the scenes. And you go, this book is PG, you know, save it for the hot mics, Joe.
Okay, got you. Now, Andrew, will you share with our audience where they can find out more about this book, Hope Rides Again, and some of your previous works?
Yeah, they can just search for Hope Rides Again on Google, you know, or you can go to my website, Andrew Schaffer, SHAFFER.com, and find all the information there, including social media links and links to my other books.
Thank you for that. Now, let's get on to Hope Rides Again a little bit more in depth here. In the first book, it was an opioid crisis. In this book, there's some gun problems in Chicago, which pretty much matches today. So will you share with us what this story, Hope Rides Again, is about and how this crack team got back together to solve their current mystery?
Yeah, so in this one, Joe Biden's in Chicago over St. Patrick's Day weekend. He's there for the Obama Economic Foundation. It's like a conference. And he's not there to see Barack Obama, but, you know, they do run into each other. And that's when he finds out that Barack has lost his BlackBerry. And so from there, he's like, well, I'm going to help out my friend here, and I'm going to help him find his BlackBerry. And so he puts on his sleuthing cap, so to speak, and heads out and looking for this phone, because they know where it pinged the website or whatever, just a couple miles away from where Barack Obama last saw it. Of course, when he gets there, he finds that the person that he thought was the thief has actually been shot, and the BlackBerry's missing. So what starts as just a looking for a missing phone becomes a part of a bigger story, and then it just keeps sort of snowballing from there into a bigger story that involves different things, such as gun violence, which is unfortunately a very, very hot topic in Chicago.
Yes.
And they actually do go, there's some more action set in trains, continuing on a theme from the first book.
Right.
So it really does go to some interesting places, sometimes some dark places too. But hopefully, you know, by investigating that type of stuff and talking about it, it brings light to those issues as well.
Yeah, you do touch on real issues in your books.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be almost irresponsible to not do that. You know, I don't want to have them out there looking, you know, doing a dog napping or something, you know, like, oh, let's go find this missing dog.
Right.
It just would feel too silly.
Okay, well, I won't call him about the cat. I think we already discussed that one.
Right.
Okay. Now, in any good story about heroes, there has to be a villain who pushes our heroes to be their best. Where do you get your villains from, and who is the villain in Hope Rides Again?
I never know when I start writing a book who the villain is going to be. That's always something that comes to me, like I'm halfway through writing the book, or I could be near the end and I'm like, I haven't figured it out. So I figure if I can't figure it out, you know, then the reader won't figure it out. But what I try to do is I have a lot of different characters, you know, that are suspects, but there's often shades of gray there. It's like, oh, well, this person, they could be a bad guy, or maybe they just were in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, or they could be a criminal, but they didn't commit this crime. It's like in the last book, I had Joe Biden come face to face with some people who were on different ends of like the opioid crisis, from users to pushers and stuff.
Right.
And so you go, oh, well, he looks at those people, you know, starts off saying, oh, they all criminals. But then he looks at them and he says, no, they're just people and, you know, they're suffering. So oftentimes, yeah, the ultimate villain of the piece doesn't appear until later on. But when they do, they're often, you know, motivated by greed and jealousy. And it's pretty clear who the villain is at that point once you get to the end of the book.
Okay, well, I am really looking forward to seeing when you actually get that villain in that has that cat he's rubbing. Just keep it in mind for at least one reader. Okay.
You know, maybe that could be the opening of the third book, which we're talking about, which we haven't started on yet. But, you know, it could be out there.
All right. I'll be looking for that. Now, for those who take politics so very seriously, what do you hope that they would get from reading this series?
I think that it is a reminder of sort of a different time, a different era almost, 3 years ago.
Yes.
That you remember that you didn't have your president in the news every single day. Sometimes a whole week could go by and you just forgot about it.
Yeah.
You didn't have to listen to politics all the time. So it's sort of weird that I would be saying this, but, you know, it is a sort of a breath of fresh air. People might pick it up because of the politicians, but then once they're reading it, you know, my dream is that they're going to forget about politics as they read it and go, oh, you know what? Let's calm down. Let's catch our breath here. And I think that I just feel like a lot of people are keyed up these days, kind of, and some of that has to do with social media. Some of it has to, you know, do with other things. But I think that reading and different types of art, podcasts, movies are really great ways to escape from that constant onslaught of politics that I feel like is just crushing us most of the time.
I definitely agree. You know, I really enjoyed both books, but dealing with Hope Rides Again and just seeing that Joe Biden pretty much talks the same way in real life as he does in these books, it's fun. It is. It is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Some people said, oh, did you see those debates? You know, he seems old. And I'm like, have you read my books? You know, he is old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just thinking, I was like, you know what? I want the oldest president possible because, you know, that means everybody gets like $5 on their birthday or something. They get a card from this guy. It'd be fun as heck, right? I don't see that as a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody turn up the heat. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, turn the heat. It's so cold in here.
Well, Andrew, it hasn't been cold for the interview. It's been fun talking with you. And I want to thank you for joining us and for this lighthearted distraction from the realities of daily politics and bringing laughter to those who also might need a hero today just to make them smile. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem. I love talking to you, Emmanuel.
That was Emmanuel Rogers in conversation with author Andrew Schaffer. Once again, more at andrewschaffer.com. That's S-H-A-F-F-E-R. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Find many past KVCR's programs via podcast through iTunes, NPR One, Spotify, and Google Play, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Also, you can now tell your smart speaker to play KVCR. Quite recently, I spoke with Mike Love, co-founder and lead singer of the Beach Boys. We did speak some about the Beach Boys, of course, but the focus was on Mike's new release written for this time of pandemic. It's a song of hope. It's also a salute to some, and it's in the form of a fun song, which has the feel of any of your favorite Beach Boys tunes. It's called This Too Shall Pass.
We all remember when school is out was a cause for celebrations. Nobody ever even thought about closing down entire nations. Washing hands and wearing masks, and it's not even Halloween. Shaking hands is a thing of the past due to social distancing. People are wondering how long it'll last. As the saying goes, this too shall pass. Well, I believe the best is yet to come. So let's get back to having fun, fun, fun in the sun. In the meantime, people, there can be no doubt. Lots of folks deserve a big shout out. First responders and the National Guard, doctors and nurses all working real hard. It's kind of like a viral Super Bowl, so do unto others, it's good for the soul. All 50 states with a unified goal. God bless America, that's how we roll. People are wondering how long it'll last. As the saying goes, this too shall pass. Well, I believe the best is yet to come. So let's get back to having fun, fun, fun in the sun. We're turning lemons into lemonade. Just be cautious, don't be afraid. Do what the doctors recommend. The sooner we do, this pandemic will end. Yet to come, so let's get back to having fun, fun, fun in the sun. To having fun, fun, fun in the sun.
This too shall pass from Mike Love, co-founder and lead singer of the Beach Boys, though this came to us through Mike's band. I spoke to Mike right when this song was being released.
This Too Shall Pass. This was written to remind us that there are better days yet to come, and this is absolutely a fun one. I've been in contact very recently with Jim Peterik, and he wrote one called Empty Arena, and it's not so much a mournful thing, but it's talking about, say, this is the sound of one hand clapping. Or what if your team scored a touchdown and there was no one to cheer? So is that kind of a thing. And there is a message of hope at the end of it. And by the way, he says hi, and he's really enjoying This Too Shall Pass, by the way.
Awesome.
Just got an email from seconds ago. But so, as I mentioned, this is really a fun one. This Too Shall Pass. You could have done something mournful or maybe sad, the sad situation, but you really gave it, for lack of a better way of saying it, a fun Beach Boys flair.
Yeah, our friend John Stamos asked me, why don't you do a parody lyric on one of your songs? I said, well, I have an idea for a new song. And so it took a couple of days for me to write it out, you know, and be happy with the lyrics. I have actually more verses than I needed, but then I called our keyboard player living in Vegas, Tim, and got the tempo and the key and the melody together, and then we send that on to our musical director, Scott Tott, who lives in Lakeland, Florida, and he did the basic track, and then he sent it on to Nashville, where one of the guys who sings high, Brian Eichenberger, lives, and our sax player, Randy Liego, he did the great sax part on the record, and then he sent it back to our keyboard player to do some more rock and roll piano, and then on to Santa Barbara to my son Christian sang on the record, and then I did my lead up in Lake Tahoe in my studio at home. And then we all sent all that stuff, including the iPhone videos of it, to John Stamos, to his home studio, and he did the drums and put the video together. So it was seven different locations. Pretty amazing way to do a song, I'll tell you.
Absolutely. And might as well go into this now. I understand that Stamos produced the video for the song, and this is a style of band performance that we've been seeing since the coronavirus lockdown. Can you talk about this, please? You know, the style of video presented, and I suppose the decision to do it that way, as opposed to people throwing their papers up in the air, getting out of school, that kind of thing, going with the song.
Yes. Well, I wanted to empathize with what everybody's going through and also give a shout out to the first responders and the doctors and nurses working in the front lines of the pandemic, but also that we're going to be turning lemons into lemonade and we'll get back to having fun in the sun. It's just that, you know, I've always accentuated the positive in lyrics, and even if a song like The Warmth of the Sun, which is years ago, 1963, we recorded it the same day, well, the wee hours of the morning, the same day that President Kennedy was taken to the hospital in Dallas, so
oh
we know
gosh.
What happened there.
Wow.
But the song itself was about you were in love, the other person doesn't feel the same way anymore, so that's over, but at least you had felt something, the euphoria of being in love at one time. So that's kind of what I mean by accentuating the positive, even if it was a negative situation.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our songs had to do with, you know, surfing and beach life and cars and cruising and girls and going to the dance looking for romance like Barbara Ann and Help Me Rhonda, I mean, Get Her Out of My Heart, you know. So there again, taking a negative thing that's happened and turn it into a positive. So This Too Shall Pass is no different. I wanted to have the tempo and the beat and the sound reminiscent of that mid-60s positivity, and that's what we came up with.
And again, it's a beautiful tune. It's a fun one. And, you know, you never know what to expect, especially a song written around such a tragic situation or a tragic time. And so it was really, I have to say, just nice and refreshing when I clicked play and just sat back and watched and listened. And I had a good time. I might as well have been listening to Help Me Rhonda or Little Deuce Cooper, you know, something like that. Some of the fun 60s stuff.
Yeah.
But I alluded to this a second ago with people throwing their papers up in the air, you know, getting out of school. That's how the song really starts with, we used to celebrate getting out of school, but now,
right?
Gosh. So talk about, please, some of the words that were coming together. I love going back to the actual true inception of the song. Maybe, you know, that thing that made you have to pull over right away and write it down before it drifts away kind of thing.
Well, I was sitting in my studio and I was thinking, you know, we all remember when school is out was a cause for celebrations. Nobody ever even thought about closing down entire nations, washing hands and wearing masks, and it's not even Halloween. Shaking hands is a thing of the past due to social distancing. That was the way the song started. I just wanted to, you know, give a little glimpse and recognition for what we're all going through. But then I wanted to bring it right to the chorus where people are saying how long it'll last. As the saying goes, this too shall pass. So I believe that better things are yet to come. We'll get back to having fun in the sun. So, you know, it just evolved that way. And then I wanted to give a shout out to the people who are in the front lines, which we did. And we're turning lemons into lemonade. And just be careful. Don't be afraid. So, you know, it just, those verses just kind of, I kept writing and writing, and I maybe have three or four verses more than we needed for a song, because it's only 2.5 minutes long or so.
Right.
And then I began the process of getting it recorded by calling my keyboard guy, Tim, in Vegas, and getting the tempo and the key and the melody worked out. Then the rest was history, you know, from seven different locations. Pretty amazing.
It sounds like it was almost stream of consciousness, except just to pause to make sure the rhyme is there.
Correct.
Nice.
Yeah. I've always been the lyricist and conceptual guy with the Beach Boys songs, whether it be California Girls or I Get Around or Fun, Fun, Fun or Good Vibrations or, you know, all those songs. My mind works best is to try to make poetry that coincides and resonates well with the tempo and the mood of the music.
Nice. That's fantastic. We were talking about the fact that This Too Shall Pass was made in isolation, all these different locations, these musicians at their own place. And we mentioned John Stamos. He's on drums for this. We have to address this. We are talking about the actor here. And I know you've been friends with him for a long time. And I know that he's performed with the Beach Boys as a drummer over the years here and there. But how did this even start, this relationship with John Stamos? And then going from acting into, hey, you know, I play the drums.
Before he was an actor, he was a drummer in a little three-piece band in Southern California. Loves the drums.
Hmm.
He came out and visited us in the mid-80s when we did a show in Washington, D.C. on July 4th. He was Blackie on General Hospital. Then he became, of course, more famously, Uncle Jesse on Full House. We actually backed him up on a song that he does when he's out with us called Forever, written by my cousin Dennis. That was performed on the episode where Uncle Jesse got married. So we've known him for a long time. He's been a big proponent of the Beach Boys, and that's why he's had us on Full House a few times. And so it couldn't be a more positive influence. And he volunteered to put the video together, and that's his field, you know, visual arts. And so we were very happy that he volunteered to do that. And he contributed a ton of time and his talents to not only the drums, but putting the whole video together, taking all this information gleaned from seven different locations to create the video.
That's really cool. I suppose with Stamos on the drums, you don't have to worry about having a good-looking frontman anymore.
That is true. He is one of the better-looking human beings around. And he's got a great family. He's got a wife and a little baby boy. And he's just such a great guy, and he's been such a friend for so many years. It's really nice. In fact, he asked me to be involved in his wedding, and I officiated. I actually pronounced him man and wife, you know.
Oh, cool.
Pretty amazing.
Way cool. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a nice little gem I didn't expect.
If every word I said could make you laugh, I'd talk forever.
This Too Shall Pass, I need to make sure people know that it's available for download and streaming at, oh, some of the usual suspects, Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube. But one of the really cool things I have to say about this song is that I read that all artists and label royalties from This Too Shall Pass, they're being donated to Feeding America's COVID-19 Response Fund. And this is helping food banks across the country, especially during this time as they're supporting communities impacted by the pandemic. So I'd like to hear again about the decision to do this, or, you know, not so much why, but you had to have been thinking about various charities or how to help.
Yes, I think there's nothing more fundamental human need than food, and there's also shelter. But, you know, there's so many people out of work and so many people in pretty desperate need of help. And I thought that Feeding America does such a fantastic job of getting food banks supplied and out to the people who need it, whether they be senior citizens or young kids that are going to school. and they've been able to donate or get maybe hundreds of millions of meals out there every year and stuff. So it's a phenomenal organization. I don't think you could find a better one that's more in need right now.
That is a fact. And we at KVCR actually partner with them around Thanksgiving and Christmas time in helping people here in the Inland Empire of Southern California. You know the area, San Bernardino and Riverside counties.
That's Empire.
Yeah.
We're turning lemons into lemonade. Just be cautious, don't be afraid. Do what the doctors recommend. The sooner we do, this pandemic will end.
David Fleming in conversation with the Beach Boys' Mike Love. Love very recently released a song and video called This Too Shall Pass. And again, you can find the song on Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, and Google Play. Also, you can see the video on YouTube. Again, a video very typical of those being released during this time of pandemic. Everyone is isolated miles and miles from one another, sometimes across the country, but then put together by John Stamos.
To having fun.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Let's go back now to my recent conversation with the Beach Boys' Mike Love. We heard about This Too Shall Pass, a song written for this time of the COVID-19 pandemic. And though this was released independent of the Beach Boys, we did, of course, speak about the Beach Boys too. So now, looking at, this is before I dive into history, just looking at the very, very recent past, beyond This Too Shall Pass, you've had quite a few new releases over the past years. The 2019 album, we had 12 Sides of Summer, you also had the year before that, a holiday album, and the year before that, Unleash the Love. Now, what I'd love to address on this is with both Unleash the Love and 12 Sides of Summer, you combined original songs with re-recordings of some Beach Boys tunes, some of these even getting a cool update.
Right.
And any of these looking at a real reimagining, you know, say taking one of the upbeat fun things and making it into a ballad. Let's hear about some of the really cool changes that gave these an update.
Yeah, one of the updates is a song called Get You Back, which our producer Terry Melcher, who produced Kokomo, went to number one in 88. Well, a little bit before that, there was Get You Back on a Beach Boy album. But I retooled the lyrics on it and made it just a little more contemporary, I believe. And it really goes over well in concert. I mean, it's not the most well-known song of ours.
Right.
You know, it's not like California Girls or I Get Around or Fun, Fun, Fun or Good Vibrations or anything, or Kokomo even. But it goes over really well and just kind of fun to reimagine songs and redo them if you think it could have been done a slightly different way, different tempos and all that kind of stuff. So it's fun to be able to go back into the laboratory and see what you can come up with, see what kind of formula you can come up with. But we've got so much time off now. We had the biggest touring year ever in the history of Beach Boys this year, but then it's all come to a halt, and most dates have been postponed rather than canceled, per se.
Yes.
And so it gives us a lot of time to think about creative applications of not only existing songs, but come up with new stuff.
Yeah.
Or come up with a treatment of songs that have never been done in the way we could do it with our harmonies.
Chewing out a rhythm on my bubble gum. The sun is out and I want some. It's not hard, not far to reach. We can hit your ride to Rockaway Beach. Rock, rock, Rockaway Beach. Rock, rock, Rockaway Beach. Rock, rock, Rockaway Beach. We can hit your ride to Rockaway Beach.
There's one that I could address very directly with 12 Sides of Summer. You cover not only things by the Dave Clark Five and even ABBA. Okay, Beach Boys kind of things doing ABBA. Okay, but Rockaway Beach by the Ramones. You
that
covered
is a
that
hot song.
Yeah.
We, you know, the Ramones did Surf and Safari years and years ago.
Mm.
And when I listened to Rockaway Beach, I said, holy mackerel, that's a great song. And we'd love to do that. So we did, and we couldn't wait to do it on our concerts. And we enjoyed doing it. It's so upbeat and positive and fun, you know, just along the lines of what we would have done in the original 60s efforts of ours.
Truly. And it's funny, we look at the Ramones as, well, the godfathers of punk, but we think of their style of music, it's actually not too dissimilar from the Beach Boys. It's a few chords, it's fast, it's fun.
Well, they obviously like the Beach Boys because they did Surf and Safari, and they love Jan and Dean, too. So although they had a slightly different style of musicianship, we could really relate to that song. I mean, Rockaway Beach, it's East Coast as you can get right there.
Looking at some of the earliest days here, I interviewed Chris Montez several years back, and I started my questions to him saying, hey, I understand you used to play football with the Beach Boys, but that was really touch football and then going over to the Wilson's house for malts. And he thought that the Wilsons were just rich because they could make malts, okay? Yeah, and so I'm curious, were you part of the scene also playing football with Chris and, you know, well, vastly different name at this point?
That was my cousin Brian, you know, and he was in Hawthorne. I was in the Baldwin Hills area. I went to a different high school. I went to Audubon Junior High School, Georgie's High School, Midtown, L.A., you know, so a slightly different circle of friends. But my cousin Brian and I would hang out a lot together. We'd go to football games at each other's schools and stuff like that. So, yeah, we had a lot of interaction, mainly through music, because we loved the Everly Brothers. We loved all the doo-wop music of the day. We both loved the Four Freshmen. He was able to break down those harmonies at the piano, and we learned a few of their arrangements. And we still do one to this day called Their Hearts Were Full of Spring, a cappella. It's beautiful. But Chris Montez, he's a great guy, a really neat person, and a damn good singer, too.
Yeah, one of the nicest guys in rock. I've met him in addition to the interview. I've met him and hung out a little bit. Yeah, truly, truly. You touched on something with the Everly Brothers, and I understand that the earliest sounds of the bands, and this may be when you were still the Pendletones, the high school garage band thing, that the music was more of the Everly Brothers and Eddie Cochran and stuff like that. But then you went to the beach sound. Is this something that you all wanted to do, or any of you having fun with the more doo-wop rock, and then Brian or one of the guys came in with, hey, the surf sound?
Doo-wop was a huge influence for the Beach Boys, yes, but also the Four Freshmen distinguished our style of harmonization with anything else in rock music, because the Four Freshmen were this incredible group of musicians who did this very close four-part harmony. They call it modern harmony back in the 50s. And so we gravitated towards them, the high lows a little bit, but more the Four Freshmen. And so that high part and the low part, I would sing the low part, Brian would sing the high part, Carl would sing, and Ellen would sing in between. It's four-part harmony. When you attach that to a Chuck Berry rhythm guitar kind of thing, and the keyboard and the saxophone and stuff, that gave us the sound, because we sound the way we sound when we sing. You know, I would write songs with Brian, so therefore I'd be sitting at the piano with him and singing along, and that's how I became the lead singer. I'd be coming up with the lyrics, and Brian would be coming up with the chord progressions. So we did Surfin', Surfin' Safari, Surfin' USA, I Get Around, Fun, 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 Help Me Run, to all those that way. And California Girls, did I say? I forgot. Anyway, so our influences were the Everly Brothers and their blend and their cute songs, Chuck Berry and his rhythm and alliteration of the songs, and the Four Freshmen and their sophisticated harmonies. And a blend of all those things together, along with the doo-wop influence, resulted in the Beach Boys sound.
That is a really cool cocktail. And I'm not making a Kokomo reference there with cocktail, but oh my gosh. And we will address that. That's like end of my time in the Navy. We got Kokomo and cocktail.
Going surfing.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with the Beach Boys' Mike Love. You'll hear about some covers and collaborations just ahead. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org.
Surfing is the only life, the only way for me. Now come on, pretty baby, and surf with me. Yeah.
You mentioned surfing, and this is not to be confused with Surfin' Safari or the other one, Surfin'. This may have been one of the first tunes. One, I believe that Murray Wilson, that is the father of the Wilson Boys, he never liked that song. Is that true? We don't have to dwell on this, but it was a side note somewhere.
He just said that we didn't know what we were doing.
Okay.
I think we proved different.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's 50, 60 years or more. Well, gosh. There's another thing that I'm quite curious if this is fact or fiction here. It's that when your first single was released, that's when you found out that you'd been renamed the Beach Boys. Is that true?
No, that's not quite accurate. We were asked, what about the Beach Boys? And I said, well, that's better than what we have, which was the Pendletones.
And Pendletones, that was a type of sweater at that point, right?
Exactly. Pendleton Mills, an Oregon company, made these woolen sweater jacket kind of things surfers would wear over their t-shirts when they're going to the beach.
Okay. So giving away my age, I suppose, I didn't know that type of sweater. I was born around the same time Pet Sounds was born. So I'm old enough to say that the Beach Boys was amongst my first 8-tracks, but young enough to still be in my 20s when Kokomo came out. So that's where I'm landing here. During this time of quarantine, just going back to this, because I made a note here that you've been able to get a lot of quality time with your wife, Jacqueline, and video calls, and you've also been turning to meditation, which you've been a devotee of transcendental meditation for a long time anyway, but has this increased, or I should say, how has this increased during this time?
Well, meditation is something I learned from Maharishi in Paris in December of 67, and about a month later he invited me to go to India when I got there, which, you know, I'd never been. It's a fascinating place. When I got there, the Beatles were all there at Maharishi's academy or ashram, and it's a beautiful spot where the Ganges comes out of the Himalayas. So it's been a part of my life in that I practice the TM, Transcendental Meditation, every day in the morning and the evening, and it's been a huge help, and it helps clear your mind. You can get a deeper level of rest and even deep sleep, and so it's profoundly relaxing and very good health-wise, and so I have a lot to be grateful there. But at the home front, we're able to do a lot more things around the house than I ordinarily would be able to do because we'd be out on tour. And so, yeah, my wife and I are enjoying Lake Tahoe. We'll go down to the beach. We've got some bikes that we will ride around on and walk the dog and just different kind of things, maybe some honeydew type of thing.
I was about to suggest that. Okay, yes.
Yeah. So we have plenty of time to enjoy our life here. But, you know, we do miss, and I very much miss, going out on tour and doing our concerts, because of all the things about recording and so on and this kind of life, I love the live music part of it, the audience response and them singing along with us on some of the songs, or just listening and applauding after some of the more subtle songs like God Only Knows and In My Room and
yes,
that kind of thing. So that's my favorite thing, is to go out and perform. And so I look forward to getting back to that as soon as we can.
I would imagine so, and I really appreciate the fact that you're looking at your dates as being postponed, not canceled. This is a glimmer of hope as well. We're looking forward to when this will start happening again, and so we all
absolutely
are, really. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you mentioned not only Chuck Berry, but also the Maharishi, and so this is a direct opening of the door for me to go to back in the USSR, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Please talk to me about, I understand McCartney was just playing it on the acoustic over breakfast someday, and then you had suggestions for him. Can you talk about this time?
I was at the breakfast table in India, and McCartney came down. It was just he and I. He came down with his acoustic guitar saying, listen to this, Mike. Flew in from Miami Beach, B-O-A-C, and all that. And I said, Paul, what you got to do is talk about all the girls around Russia in the middle part, Georgia on my mind, and all that kind of stuff, which he did. Turns out Sir Paul is able to craft a tune pretty handily, it looks like, as a matter of fact.
Well, the way girls really not.
Yeah, so that was a fascinating time and a really great time musically as well as spiritually, and, you know, Maharishi giving lectures every day and meditating for several hours at a time. It was a fascinating time.
That would be an incredible time, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I understand that Paul really enjoyed throwing in the Beach Boys parody. There were some deciding whether to go more Chuck Berry or a little bit let's go to the Beach Boys kind of thing. I understand he enjoyed that. Was he really open to the suggestion, or just, oh, that's really cool,
yeah,
let's go?
Oh, yeah, he incorporated the ideas right away. But the thing is, I think me being there, and he started thinking in a Beach Boys vernacular. You know, he's a very creative guy. And he says that they listened to Pet Sounds, and it influenced them in their Sgt. Pepper's album.
You mentioned some of the more subtle tunes also, and this is also another cover. Another one of my past interviews was with George Galfo from the Mystics. Okay, so now I'm looking at Hushabye. How did you guys come to cover this? This was a regional hit, I suppose, for these guys.
You know, when you're starting out in your first couple of years, you don't have all your own music, so you do recordings of other people's songs, like the Beatles did. In fact, they did a Little Richard song, and we did Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry. And so because of our harmonies and the harmonies in Hushabye, we were attracted to that song. And we did that. On the R&B side, we did Why Do Fools Fall in Love, which was Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers.
Yeah.
So we loved that song, and my cousin Brian came up with some great chords to open that song. But yeah, Hushabye was a beautiful song, and we loved doing it.
Nice. Well, while we're in the neighborhood of talking about covers and collaborations, I mentioned Jim Peterik. We were talking about That's Why God Made the Radio. He talked about the fact that he was having dinner with Brian Wilson, and that's when it kind of came together, when the seed was planted, as he said to me just a bit ago. But he said that it was over the course of 4 more years to bring the song to completion, along with some of the other folks from the Ides of March. What kind of time did you spend with him, and was he involved in furthering the harmonies or the lyrics?
No, I think he was more in touch with Brian and whoever Brian was working with at the time. Yeah. I haven't spent time with him like that.
Okay. Well, he did say on this email just 30 minutes ago to say hello to you and that he is very much enjoying This Too Shall Pass.
Thank you. Please tell him thank you back.
I appreciate your time on this, and I will just simply get the other contact for the book and get that sent and set something up for a little bit down
the road.
That's
awesome. Excellent. I would love to.
Well,
thank
I look
you for
forward
being
to
so into everything.
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you so much for your time, Mike, and for the music and what you're continuing to do and why you're doing it.
Thank you very much for getting the word out for us. Thanks a lot.
That was Mike Love, co-founder and lead singer with the Beach Boys. Once again, the song he released with his own band called This Too Shall Pass can be heard on Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, and Google Play. Also, you can see the video on YouTube, and proceeds from this song go to Feeding America Food Bank. Thank you, Mike, once again, and thanks also to Emmanuel Rogers and his interview with Andrew Schaefer. More on Hope Rides Again, the second in the Obama-Biden mystery series, at andrewschaefer.com. That's S-H-A-F-F-E-R. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and a big thanks once again to Shireen Awad. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play, as well as NPR One, and most past shows are kvcrnews.org/arts. Also, you can now tell your smart speaker to play KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.